Judeo-Christian versus Christian Israel, part 3. Of course, in this series of messages, as we've already seen in the last two messages, we're doing a contrast between the two, Judeo-Christianity versus Christian Israel. In last week's message, we contrasted the preeminence of the two. In other words, where the preeminence lies with the two different groups. Of course, with Judeo-Christianity, even in the name, you can see where the preeminence lies. It's called Judeo-Christianity versus the preeminence that's found in the other group, as it's called Christian Israel. The one gives preeminence to Judaism and thus, in essence, to the Jews, and the other gives the preeminence to Christianity and thus, in essence, to Christ. And I don't know if you caught it very well in last week's message, but I think that's especially enlightening when you understand the Messiah of the two. The Messiah, at least, of Judaism is the Jewish people. And Judeo-Christianity gives them the preeminence. Where the Messiah, or the Christ, of true Christianity, specifically Christian Israel, is the Christ. And who gets the preeminence in Christian Israel? Christ gets the preeminence. We covered that in the last message and a little bit in the first message. We want to continue now with another comparison, or better put, another contrast between the two, between Judeo-Christian and Christian Israel. What we want to look at in today's message is dichotomy versus harmony. In Judeo-Christianity, we find not harmony at all, but instead we find a dichotomy. Now let me give you the definition for dichotomy, or at least one definition for the word dichotomy. Coming from Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary again, it defines dichotomy as, its first definition, is a division or the process of dividing into two, especially mutually exclusive and contradictory groups. In other words, for anyone who correctly understands the two terms, Judeo and Christianity, will find that it is absolutely impossible to harmonize the two. They are opposed and offensive to one another and antagonistic to each other. Now, I know that that's probably going to be a surprise to a lot of people, or that would come, at least at first, as a surprise to a lot of people, that those two terms, Judeo and Christian, are contradictory to one another. But the fact is, or that is the fact, and I think it'll be absolutely clear by the time we get done with today's message and next week's message as well. Now, I tried to come up with an illustration that would really illustrate that this idea of dichotomy, as it's defined in Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary. And first I thought, well, it's kind of like saying communist American. Or it's kind of like maybe saying, this was at least my first thoughts, it's kind of like maybe saying Democrat Republican. You know, there was a time when we used to be able to say that, when communist American was a dichotomy, where you couldn't put the two together because they were in total opposition to one another. There used to be a time in America's politics when Republican and Democrat, to put the two together, it was a dichotomy. But it's no longer a dichotomy anymore. You know, at first I wanted to try to do that, and all of a sudden it hit me. I can't do that anymore. It's no longer a dichotomy to say American communist or communist American, or to say Democrat Republican. And as I thought, you know, there just isn't anymore a good enough illustration. Even those, had they been legitimate, would not be a good enough illustration to illustrate the total antagonistic attitude or principles between Judaism and Christianity. There is not a good enough illustration that would illustrate how antagonistic those two are. Now, I know that at this point, if people were listening to the tape, or looking to the future as an understanding that there will be times probably when someone will listen to this tape, that they're going to respond again. They're going to say, how in the world can you say that? How can you say that? Don't you know that we're indebted to Judaism? Or at least that's what many of our preachers today would like us to believe. And that's what so many people today are being told. For example, let me share with you an article from a newspaper. It comes from the Houston Chronicle. The title of this particular article is entitled San Antonio Fundamentalist Battles Anti-Semitism. You know, some of the people who are strongest against this so-called thing called anti-Semitism happen to be fundamentalist preachers, even more so than the Jewish people. They're being used, of course. Let me share with you a little bit about this article, or from this article. It's about a man called John Hagee. I'm guessing that's how you pronounce his name, maybe Hagee, H-A-G-E-E. He's a fundamentalist pastor from San Antonio and a friend of Israel. And they say he's truly a strange fish. And the reason they say that, a little bit later in the article, he says, simple, the man has a mission. He's out to attack anti-Semitism. And he also believes that Jews can come to God without going through Jesus Christ. Now, we've dealt with that, of course, in last week's message. But here's another man who believes that somehow the Jews are a special people and that they don't have to have salvation through Christ, in complete contradiction to everything that's said in the New Testament. Then it goes on, and I think it's this next paragraph that really is interesting in light of what we're talking about today. It says, quote, Christianity, and this is coming from Pastor Hagee, says, Christianity has a great debt of gratitude toward the Jewish people. The minister said, the Jewish people gave us the Word of God. They gave us the prophets, the patriarchs, the first family, Mary and Joseph, and a very prominent Jewish rabbi. Guess who? Jesus Christ. What kind of faith or foundation would we have without the Jews? Honoring the Jewish people is a very rootstock principle in Christianity. End quote. Or how about another reverend, and I hope you know, I think probably you do here, and I want to say it for the sake of the tape audience. I hope that you know when I say Reverend so-and-so, that I'm saying it very irreverently. Because there's no man today who should ever be called reverend. The only reverend that there ever has been and ever will be is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Yahweh Almighty. There is no reverend outside of him. And these men who want to all of a sudden take on the name reverend should tell you something about those people and where their mind is at. But I will give him the irreverent title, as I will call it in his case, as found in this in the particular article that I took this from. How about the Reverend Williams D. Davies of Union Theological Seminary who discussed, quote, Christian dependence and growth from Judaism, end quote, at an interfaith conference of theologians and teachers of religion sponsored by the Anti-Defamation League and others. He said, this was March 25th, 1965, a little bit outdated, but nonetheless still pertinent because they're still saying the same things today. And this is what he said. Quote, Christianity would be much stronger if its Jewish heritage had not been neglected. End quote. You know, I don't know about you, but I, as one preacher of the gospel, certainly have problems with that, especially in light of what I'm going to share with you as this message goes on. You know, others would certainly want to challenge. Well, don't you know that the two share common roots? Or don't you know that Yahshua was first Jewish and then became the founder of the Christian religion? Pastor Hagee, again, on that point, says this. He says, quote, Judaism doesn't need Christianity to explain its existence, but Christianity has to have Judaism to explain its existence. In other words, what he's saying is that Christianity wouldn't exist today if it wasn't for Judaism. Or, let's go to the irreverent William D. Davies once again. He says this in that regard. He says, quote, Jesus was, in a sense, a rabbi, no less than a prophet. Both the method and very largely the substance and form of his ethical teachings were rabbinical. Nourished in the synagogue, Jesus gave his followers much of the ethics of the synagogue. End quote. Now, those are not Jewish rabbis, people. Those are proclaimed preachers of the gospel of Yahshua the Christ. You know, I can just hear again. And no wonder they would ask these kind of questions in light of what many of the preachers today are preaching in Judeo-Christianity. But I can just hear somebody else coming up and saying, don't you know that they share the same moral law, Judaism and Christianity? That is from the Old Testament. Don't you know that they share that in common? And how can you say that the two are so antagonistic to one another? You know, Christianity is constantly, and I think you're probably fully aware of that, but Christianity is constantly being bombarded with these kind of statements. But the question, and probably is very seldom asked today, but the question that needs to be that needs to address all of those statements is, are they true? But are they true? You know, when a lie is told long enough and often enough, that is when the statement is fulfilled that says, truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. You know, you keep telling a lie over and over and over again until most of the people are convinced of it. All of a sudden, when you tell them the truth, it sounds very strange. And beyond that, the person, the strange one telling it, is often labeled as being an enemy of all that is truth, in spite of the fact that they're the one who's telling the truth. Certainly becomes stranger than fiction when the lie has been told over and over and over again, and how it is the case. And again, this message, this at least this far into the message, which seems strange to a lot of people based on the lies that they've been told so many times for so many years now, not only from the Jews, but also from their very pastors, the ones they are to follow, they're supposed to be able to believe in and follow. I received a letter this last week from a man that's on the tape ministry, and he said, quote, it can take less than a minute to utter a lie, but days, months, and even years are required to find the truth and dispose of the lie, end quote. You know, that is oftentimes the case. Many times because of that lie being perpetuated, and it starts just that one little segment, a few seconds. It's perpetuated, and then it takes off. And boy, even though it got started in that simple way, it sometimes takes years to diffuse it and to bring about the truth. But you know, in this case, in this particular case, it shouldn't be that difficult to come up with the truth, because all we have to do is examine some of these statements that have been made, that are being made by preachers today in Judeo-Christianity, in light of the bold, hard facts. Let's just do that. That's what I want to do in this message, in preparation of comparing and looking at the real dichotomy. Because first you've got to deal with the fact that they are not in harmony before we can talk and show that they are a dichotomous to each other. Let's just look at some of these statements. Let's begin with the statement that we have common roots, or that is, that our foundations of faith have the same roots. That is in the Old Testament. That is a statement that's often made. Don't you know that we all have our roots back there in the Old Testament? The Jews have it back there. That was theirs. And the Christians have theirs in the New Testament, but coming from the Old Testament. Now, I heard of a Catholic church, and I can't remember where it's at, but I heard of a Catholic church that built up within the Catholic church, within the building complex, a seminary. One wing was devoted to the Christians for the New Testament, and one wing was devoted to the Jews for the Old Testament. Well, should we have a problem with that? That we've got common roots? Can anybody debate whether we've got common roots in that matter and that we both have common roots back to the Old Testament? The Jews may not accept the New Testament, but don't they have common roots with us back to the Old Testament? Well, you don't have to listen to me. Let's hear Rabbi Ben Zion Boxer on this particular issue. He, in Judaism and the Christian Predicament, book he wrote on page 59, he says this. He says, quote, "This is not an uncommon impression, and one finds it sometimes among Jews as well as Christians, that Judaism is the religion of the Hebrew Bible. It is, of course, a fallacious impression," end quote. It's false, he says, even whether it be amongst the Jews or amongst the Christians. And then on page 159, he just seals the lid on it, because he says, quote, "Judaism is not the religion of the Bible," end quote. Well, if it's not the religion of the Bible, everybody's claiming it's the religion of the Bible today, both Jews and most Christians alike. If it's not the religion of the Bible, then what's it the religion of? Well, let's go to the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, and let's see if it can help us in that answer. It says under the title of Pharisees, here is its quote. It says, "The Jewish religion as it is today," and I hope you catch that, "as it is today," it's talking about the Jewish religion of today, "the Jewish religion as it is today takes its descent," traces its descent, "without break through all the centuries from the Pharisees. A little bit later it says, the Talmud is the largest and most important single piece of their literature. The Talmud, not the Bible. Everybody's proclaiming that the Bible, at least the Old Testament, is the Hebrew Scriptures. Well, not according to the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia. The Talmud is their largest and most important piece of literature. You know, if that's the case, if the Talmud is that to the Jews, then it's probably important for us to know what and where the Talmud originates from. Let me read to you from the four, you know, in the best place. If you want to find out where the Talmud is from, probably the best place to do that, rather than have to take anybody else's word about it, probably the best place to go is to the Talmud itself. So let me read to you from the foreword of the first English translation of the Talmud. This is by the late great chief, Rabbi Hertz of Great Britain. Here's what he says in the introduction, or in the foreword. Quote, the beginnings of Talmudic literature date back to the time of the Babylonian exile in the 6th pre-Christian century. End quote. Now, did you catch that? Did you notice how he said that the beginnings of Talmudic literature date back to Moses and Mount Sinai? Did you catch that? That's not what he said. Isn't that what most of the preachers are saying today? He didn't say it goes back to Mount Sinai. He said that it goes back to the Babylonian exile in the 6th pre-Christian century. It doesn't go back to Mount Sinai. It only goes back to the Babylonian captivity. In Harmsworth's History of the World, in a section on the Hebrew peoples, on page 1781 through 1784 of volume 3, it is shown that, quote, Judaism was not evolved in Judah. In other words, Judaism is not the religion of the ancient Israelites. That's what he's saying. It's shown that again, that Judaism was not involved in Judah. It was in Babylon that Judaism first became that which it was and still is, end quote. It doesn't go back to the ancient Israels. It was not the religion of the ancient Israels, and that's from their mouths. That's not me saying that. They're admitting that to you. You know, it's made that whole point is made crystal clear by the late Rabbi Stephen S. Wise when he says, quote, the return from Babylon and the adoption of the Babylonian Talmud marks the end of Hebrewism. In other words, it marks the end of all ties that the Jews ever had with the Old Testament Scriptures. Let me read that again and then finish the quote. He says, the return from Babylon and the adoption of the Babylonian Talmud marks the end of Hebrewism and the beginning of Judaism. End quote. You notice that he makes a difference between a contrast, Hebrewism, which follows the Old Testament, and Judaism, which does not. And that was a rabbi. That was one of their rabbis that gives you that information. In light of all of that, based on all of those quotes that I just shared with you, in light of all of that, Judeo-Christianity should really be called Pharisaic Christianity. How do you think that'd go over? You know, they wouldn't dare call it Pharisaic Christianity because nobody accepted it. That would start opening too many doors. Maybe that's what we should start calling it. When somebody says Judeo-Christian, I'm a member of the Judeo-Christian Society. Maybe we should come back and say, no, you're a member of the Pharisaic Christian Society, or you're involved in a Pharisaic Christian ethic, or a Pharisaic Christian heritage. You're not involved with Judeo-Christianity at all, because that's a misnomer. It won't work. But you're involved with Pharisaic Christianity. How about looking at the statement that they make that we have the same moral laws? You know, in order for Judaism and Christianity to share the same moral laws as so often is proclaimed today, then they would have to share in the same common religious book, the Bible. Well, we've just proven otherwise, that they don't share in common the same book. Matter of fact, the book of one of those, the Christians, the Bible, is detested by the other group. They don't share the same religious books with the same religious or moral laws. They'd have to share in it. Herman Wouk in the Talmud's Heart's Blood of the Jewish Faith again proves this. It says, quote, in the Talmud, in this article, he says, quote, the Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. Whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies we observe, whether we are Orthodox, conservative, Reform, or merely spasmodic sentimentalist, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law. They can't share in common moral beliefs when they have different religious books with different moral laws. And I'm here to tell you, and we'll see it more clearly in next week's message, but I'm here to tell you this morning that when it comes to morality, the Bible and the Talmud are diametrically opposed to each other. Absolutely. How about the statement concerning Yahshua's Jewishness? You know, the idea that Yahshua was first Jewish and then he became as a Jew, or even as a rabbi, as we've read from some statements today, that Yahshua was first Jewish or even a Jewish rabbi and then became the founder of the Christian religion and brought in all of his Jewishness into Christianity. Well, what about that statement? Can that be proven true? Well, it really all depends on what you mean by the word Jewish. You know, everything really revolves. Whether that statement is true or not really depends upon what you mean by the word Jewish, or what they might mean by the word Jewish. If you mean by Jewish that he was a resident of the geographical area known as Judea, then yes, he was. But in actuality, it would certainly be better put that he was a Judean, a resident of the land of Judea. But if you want to call him Jewish from that standpoint, I'll accept that. It's really not the best term, but I'll accept that, if that's what you mean. Or if you mean by Jewish that he was descended from the tribe of Judah, then, yes, he was. But, of course, in actuality, it would certainly be better put to be in that light to call him a Judahite, much like a Canaanite was of the race of the Canaanites. It'd be better to call him a Judahite in that case, of the lineage of the tribe of Judah. But if you want to call him Jewish, if that's your terminology, you want to call him Jewish in that sense, I'll accept that. Yes, he was. If you want to call him Jewish with that definition, yes, he was. Better put Judahite, but I'll accept that your terminology in that regards. But if you mean by Jewish that he was of the same ancestral lineage as the modern Jew today, then no, he was not. For the modern-day Jew traces his lineage back through Edom and Jephthah, while Yahshua's lineage is traced through Jacob and Shem. They don't have anything in common. Or if you mean by Jewish that he was of the religion of Judaism, then no, he was not. For we have already seen that Judaism is Phariseeism, and Yahshua during his ministry continually denounced Judaism. You know, yes, Yahshua was, quote-unquote, a Jew, using the terminology of today. It's really not the best terminology, but yes, Yahshua was a Jew, using that terminology, when it came to his residence in his particular geographical area, in the particular geographical area of Judea. Yes, he was a Jew. Again, not using the best terminology, but using the terminology of today. Yes, he was a Jew when it comes to his descent through the tribe of Judah and the house of Judah. But no, he was not a Jew when it came to his religion in comparison to Judaism today, or in comparison to the lineage of the modern-day Jew today. He was a Jew in the other two senses, and thus he then went on to begin Christianity, but it has nothing. It has nothing today to do with modern Judaism. And you can't link Judeo and Christian together because of it. He denounced Judaism because Judaism is Phariseeism. Let's go on. What about the statement that I actually started with? And that is this supposed indebtedness that we have to Judaism today, as again so many preachers are proclaiming, that Christianity is indebted to Judaism. Well, is Judaism the religion that Yahshua upheld during his ministry here on earth? Is it the religion that's upheld in the New Testament? You know, if we have such an indebtedness to Judaism today, you would expect that to have been the religion that was upheld before our eyes. if we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Judaism, you'd expect there'd have been something positive said about Judaism by God, by Yahshua the Christ. Wouldn't you? I think you certainly would. No, it wasn't the religion that was held up by Yahshua. Remember that Judaism, according to quotes from Jewish sources that we've already quoted in this message, Judaism equals Phariseeism. In Matthew 16:6, Yahshua's words were these. He says, quote, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees," end quote. And then in verse 12, he identifies what the leaven is, and he says it's their teaching. He says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. He says, beware of the leaven of Judaism. That's what he's saying. And everybody else saying, we're indebted to Judaism. Christ saying, beware of it. You think I get excited about that? You're right. I do. I'm sick of hearing that we're to be indebted to a people who want to destroy us. As pointed out in our last series, Know Thine Enemy, whose main and maybe their only objective is to destroy us. Destroy Christianity and the founder of Christianity, Yahshua the Christ himself. You know, most people aren't even aware, let alone beware. For most people don't even realize that Phariseeism still survives today in modern Judaism. Let me read to you just again to verify it a little bit further, so you don't have to take my word for it. Let me read to you from a book entitled The Pharisees, The Sociological Background of Their Faith, by Rabbi Louis Finkelstein. Now, just so you know that Rabbi Finkelstein just wasn't a fly-by-nighter, let me give you some of his credentials. He was chancellor and professor of theology at the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and president of the American Academy for Jewish Research. This is the book he wrote, again, The Pharisees, The Sociological Background of Their Faith. Rabbi Louis Finkelstein was not only all of what I just shared with you, but he was also considered or chosen by the Kehillas, which means Jewish communities. He was chosen by the Jewish communities of the world in 1937 as one of the outstanding luminaries of Judaism. He was picked and says, this man understands Judaism. So you're not going to have to take my word about Phariseeism equaling Judaism. You're not going to have to take a outcast Jewish rabbi's word. No, you get to take the word of one of their luminaries, as they put it. One of their held-up rabbis. One of their looked-upon greats in the area of Judaism. And these are his words. Listen carefully. The Pharisees, the sociological background of their faith, the foreword to the first edition reads, or part of it reads thus. Phariseeism became Talmudism. Talmudism became medieval rabbinism, and medieval rabbinism became modern rabbinism. But throughout these changes of name, the spirit of the ancient Pharisee survives unaltered. Notice that it went from name to name to name, but it survives, he said, unaltered. It goes on to say that when the Jew, and a little bit later, studies the Talmud, he is actually repeating the arguments used in the Palestinian academies. He's talking about the modern-day Jew, the Jew of today. When he studies the Talmud, it says that he is actually repeating the arguments used in the Palestinian academy. And then it goes on a little bit later, and it says, from Palestine to Babylonia, from Babylonia to North Africa, Italy, Spain, France, and Germany, from these to Poland, Russia, and Eastern Europe generally, ancient Phariseeism has wandered. And of course, from there, it certainly has wandered and even in some ways could be said to have taken over in the United States of America. Phariseeism is Judaism. Judaism today is Phariseeism. Again, so many want to say that we're indebted, that we have an indebtedness to Judaism. And yet, when we understand that Judaism is Phariseeism, it sure puts a different light on it, especially as we would examine the scathing denunciations of Yahshua the Christ on Phariseeism. Because when he was denouncing Phariseeism, he was denouncing Judaism, because they're one and the same. And it's too bad that connection has not been made, or it's been withheld from the people in Judeo-Christianity today. I don't think there's ever been such a thing called Judeo-Christianity That lie could have never been perpetuated had they just understood that one point, that Judaism equals Phariseeism. Let me just give you some scriptures, so we don't have to turn to all these, but just in case you want to turn to them. As far as Yahshua's in seeing Yahshua's attitude toward Phariseeism, Matthew 15, 1 through 9 is one place to look. Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 13 is another. And then in Matthew 23, verses 13 through 29 and verse 33, really show the attitude that Yahshua himself had toward Phariseeism, which is Judaism today. Rather than upholding Phariseeism or Judaism before the eyes as something great, and something fantastic for us to follow after, he denounces it with the greatest authority. Let's just turn to Matthew 23 and at least read just one of those verses. I really think sums it up so well. Matthew chapter 23. We've got the time. Let me just read this whole passage. Would be good just to have on the tape and just for you to hear. Let's just read the denunciation because it just keeps getting better and better. It keeps getting more powerful and more powerful. Matthew chapter 23. And let me start with verse 13 and listen. Now, and keep in mind as I read this to you, because hopefully you'll read it. If you've never read it in this light before, you'll read it with a new understanding as I read it now. When he's talking about the Pharisees, keep in mind that he is talking about modern Judaism today just as well. It's one and the same. Starting with verse 13, listen to what he says. He says, "But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from men. For you do not enter yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in." And as you understand more of Judaism, or as you have come to understand more of Judaism, notice how it fits so perfectly in what's going on in Judaism, not just in Phariseeism of his day, but in Judaism today. Verse 14, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you devour widows' houses, even while for a pretense you make long prayers. Therefore you shall receive greater condemnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel about on sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, 'Whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obligated.' You fools and blind men," talking to the very same people, "which is more important, the gold of the temple that sanctified the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the offering upon it, he is obligated. You blind men, which is more important, the offering of the altar that sacrifices the offering? Therefore he who swears both by the altar and everything on it. And he who swears by the temple swears both by the temple and by him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits on it. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin, and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But those are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides, who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish, so that the outside of it may become clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous. And say, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. Consequently, you bear witness against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You serpents," in verse 33, I think sums it up all so well. I was planning just to read that verse, but since we had the time, I thought I'd read the whole passage. But verse 33 in itself is enough. It says, "You serpents, you brood of vipers, how shall you escape the sentence of hell?" Maybe I should have read that in place of every time I had the word Pharisee. Maybe I should have just put in Judaism. Or you Judaites is probably how I would have to read it. Let's go to verse 33. "You serpents, you brood of vipers, how shall you escape the sentence of hell?" I guess it's not in that one. But verse 29, "Woe to you, scribes and Judaistic hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous." You can do that replacement, because according to their rabbis, they're one and the same. And that denunciation by Christ in Matthew 23 and in the other passages that I shared with you are denunciations against Judaism today as well, because they are one and the same. You know, thus far in this message today, we've proven that the religion of Judaism has nothing in common with the Bible, or that the ancient religion of the, or with the ancient religion of the Israelites. We've proven that the ethics or morality of Christianity and Judaism are not the same, and we'll deal more with that in the upcoming message. We've proven that Judaism was not the religion of Yahshua, and that Yahshua does not share a common heritage with the modern-day Jew today. You know, not only all of that, but you know, not only does Judaism and Christianity not share a common heritage or ethic together, but they are in a complete contradiction to each other. And you don't have to believe me again to accept that. You can take it right from them. Let me share with you one more quote in closing in that regards. Not only do they not share this common ethic or common heritage that is so often being proclaimed today, but they are in complete contradiction to each other. We'll use this quote as the conclusion of today's message and also for the introduction for the next message. It's from Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz. He was chairman of the Department of Jewish Philosophy at the Hebrew Theological College. This is taken from the article entitled Judaism, or in the periodical entitled Judaism in the winter of 1966. Here's what he says. You don't have to take my word. Let's hear Rabbi Berkowitz. He says, quote, "As to the dialogue in the purely theological sense, nothing could be more fruitless or pointless. Judaism is Judaism because it rejects Christianity, and Christianity is Christianity because it rejects Judaism. What is usually referred to as the Jewish Christian tradition exists only in Christian or secularist fantasy." End quote. Again, you don't have to take my word. He said it. They have nothing in common. In next week's message, we will prove the dichotomy of Judeo-Christianity in these areas: their beliefs concerning Yahshua, their beliefs concerning the Scriptures, and in their beliefs concerning morality. And you will see that to put Judeo and Christianity together, there is a total dichotomy there. They cannot exist. They are in opposition. It's doublethink to say Judeo-Christian. And then we'll contrast that with the harmony that we find in Christian Israel. Let's all stand and we'll close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we come before you again as our God and King, our Judge and Lawgiver, one who shows no partiality and who always brings about justice, shows justice in all decisions. Father, we again realize in light of this message and other facts that you've allowed us to see that there is much injustice that's going on in this world, much deception, Father, as a result of the lies that are being proclaimed by the enemies of Christ. Lord, we're thankful that as for each time that you allow us to be able to see a little bit more. Again, I pray that this message, a series of messages, would be used by you to further the kingdom of the gospel of Christ, to further proclaim truth and to reveal the deceptiveness that is going on in this world around us. Lord, that you would use this to open the hearts of those out there who would be willing servants of yours had they not been deceived. Use this to your praise and glory. We're just thankful of the Lord again to be in your service and ask that you would continue to use us as such. Keep us humble, Father, at the same time give us the wisdom we need to deal with the serpents, the Pharisees, with Phariseeism and Judaism as it is today. Lord, we love you and we praise you. We ask these things in your Son, Yahshua. Amen.